All right. Welcome back to Become a Calm Mama. I am your host. I'm Darlene Childress. And today I am excited about this. And I know everyone who's listening is going to be excited because I have Maggie Reyes, who is a marriage coach, on the podcast today. Welcome, Maggie. Say hi.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. I am so excited for everyone listening. If you listen to this podcast, you love Darlene's approach. I have a crush on her. Respectfully, I'm happily married, but I respectfully have the biggest crush on her. So I'm so excited about everything we're going to talk about today.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I really thought to myself, why don't I just turn the mic on and then you just talk for 45 minutes and that would be enough. And because I want to learn, you know, from you. And I love our work. Our approaches are similar in that we're basically relationship coaches, right?
Yes.
And where I spend all my time is coaching parents and their relationship with their kids. And then of course their relationship with themselves.
Yes.
And that's how you are too. You're coaching relationship with your partner.
Yes.
And then also relationship with yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just love talking to you and having you here. So we're going to get into it. I don't even know. Do you want to do a backstory? You want to tell us a little bit about yourself? I don't know.
You lead and I will follow. So I'm happy to introduce myself a little bit more. So before I was a coach, I worked in human resources. So I have lots of thoughts about how we relate to stressful situations, whether it's at work, in our marriage. So relationships just from every angle fascinate me. And I became a life coach and I specialized in marriage. I love continuing education. Darlene and I were talking about that earlier. And so I like to use a mix of evidence-based interventions with intuitive things that have just come to me over the years. And some of the things we're going to talk about today is a mix of both of those things. And I love to just nerd out on helping people have better relationships. So that's me.
I nerd out on it too. I just can't even believe, you know, how much time I spend reading about the nervous system and relationships and trauma and how it plays out and like communication skills and just anything, self-development. Yeah.
Oh,
so you
cool.
And I are kindred spirits in that way. You are going to talk to us about how to have a better marriage.
Yes.
Yes. I do want to say some people on listening may not be married.
Yeah.
And they might be like, oh, this isn't for me. Or maybe they're divorced or maybe they're, you know, have a boyfriend or girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
So what would you say to someone listening?
So I would say how to have a better relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Every single thing we talk about, especially the topics we're going to talk about today, because I used to work in HR, I thought about, is this the same for a team at work? Would these principles apply? And every time I sort of test my hypothesis for any type of relationship, like, yep, it applies here, it applies there, it applies over here. So instead of calling it how to have a better marriage, just call it how to have a better relationship. And then everyone listening, think about the relationship in your life that you wish could improve. And what we're going to talk about today, have that on your mind as I explain some of the things. And let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's so good. Especially, I think, like parents of teenagers or young adults often start, and I have a lot of clients who listen, you know, because they're my friends and they've like, you know, had raised their kids mostly. And they're like, ooh, how do I connect better with my young adults? And like any of that. Yeah. Or your own parents, if they're still alive. Or your siblings. So there's always room here for that.
Always room. And tell me if you found this, I'm sure you have, where you'll have someone come and work on the relationship with their child, but then all their relationships improve.
Immediately. Like in my course, they're always like, can I use this on my husband?
The answer is yes, by the way.
Yes, the answer is yes, because it's a relationship model as yours is a relationship model. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want you to tell us
the
four essential elements for having a great relationship.
Okay. So here they are. And then I'm going to explain them and how I arrived at them and all that. So perspective, partnership, pleasure, and personal power. Now, what are these things and why do they matter? So what happens is when you're in a relationship with someone and it's not feeling amazing and you're like, what do I do about it? Where do I start? Right? When you ask yourself that question, I don't even know where to begin. Sometimes we're tied up in these emotional pretzels and we're like, where do we go? Okay. The place that you start is you ask yourself, is this a perspective issue? How I'm looking at it? Could I look at it differently? Just ask yourself, is there another way that I could look at this that would help us move forward? Is it a partnership issue? Do we have collaboration and rapport? So sometimes we're in relationships with people where we feel at odds, where we're like on opposite teams, right? So maybe it's your boss at work, maybe it's your cousin, maybe it's, you know, your mother-in-law, whatever it may be. It's like, what if we were on the same team? Mm-hmm. The same team could be just, I want peace in the holidays whenever I see them, you know, once a year. Like that could be the loosest interpretation of being on the same team could apply, right? But if we were on the same team, how would I approach this? How would I look at it? Then we bring the perspective in with the partnership. The more we want something done, the more rapport we need to build. That's just life.
Yeah. Right? It's so, like an emotional bank or something, you know, you need to make a lot of deposits in order to make withdrawals. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
I sometimes talk about it in terms of capacity. I'll say like, you know, you have to have a lot of emotional capacity in this relationship to, you know, either set follow through on a boundary or relational capacity. How much can your relationship take? How much can you take? Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. So same. So is it a partnership issue? Have I spent no time building rapport and therefore we make no progress in whatever it is, right? And it could be with a teenager. It could be with your boss. It could be with your spouse. Like the same principle applies. So when I was thinking about, and I'll tell you the other two, but when I was coming up with this idea, I had coached, I don't know, thousands of hours. And I was like, if I were to distill the issues I coach on every single day, if I was just to go to the straight core, when it's just the seed of a situation, what are the themes that always reappear over and over and over and over again? And I was like, perspective, how I'm looking at it. Partnership is their rapport. Pleasure, are we having fun? And in the marriage context that I coach on most of the time is there sexual connection? Is there sexual pleasure? Are we enjoying our connection physically? But when I tried to extrapolate it to like a team at work, you know, a team that isn't having fun at work doesn't thrive. So you can have relationships. You can have all kinds of relationships. We all do, right? In order to get to thriving, to something like delight, to something like enjoyment, if you don't have these four things, thriving is what's not possible. The relationship is possible. So the purpose of these things, like what gets me closer to thriving or to enjoyment or to delight, it's going to be one of these four things. So we talked about pleasure. So it's not necessarily just sexual pleasure. It's any kind of pleasure.
And I would say that probably the more fun you have, the more rapport you build.
Yeah. It's one of the ways into rapport. So that is such a good point, Darlene, that I wanted to share with everybody, which is so many of us think about that relationship that you thought of at the beginning of the episode, is we think we have to resolve the issue before we can have fun or be nice or be kind or be generous or do whatever. And we're like, this big issue is like a wall in between me and the other person. So think about a teenager. Think, oh, they're not respecting the rule of cleaning up their room. So we're just going to be like mean, right? Like you have to be harsh.
We can't be nice until they listen or something that. Like, nice no, there's no fun. There's no, we're not, I'm not taking, like my son and I are doing some trips. I'm not taking him until he straightens up.
Right. That that attitude, we all have it. We've all done it. What I have found over the years is the way we get him to listen in that scenario, the way we get the thing to happen that we want to happen is through continuing to relate to the person to build rapport, including things that are more fun, more lighthearted, and that aren't as heavy as the thing that we're trying to resolve.
Yeah, seriously. Because we, especially in parenting, you spend so much time like telling your kid what they need to do and what needs to be done. And there's like so much energy spent, like get your shoes on, sit down, eat your breakfast, you know, whatever, do your homework. That then where's the space to just be like, tell me more about Pokemon.
Yeah. Yes. And it's something that, or if we're in a rush and we don't have time, like that school, getting to school time, right? We're in a rush and we need to go. How can we build the time to talk about the Pokemon? How can we build the time that we, and listen, that's hard, right? That's why we both have jobs, because that's hard and we have to figure it out and all that. Like, I don't want to minimize how hard that would be.
No, it's hard. Talk about it in marriage though, because I was thinking like, what's the Pokemon of marriage?
Okay. So many.
I think about my particular partner and I'm in a long marriage. We've been married 26 years. And sometimes I'm bored of his Pokemon, or I mean, we'll get into talking about that, but it's like some of that rapport building can be, I'm not that interested. Just like a lot of my clients are like, I don't care about Pokemon. And it's like, I don't care about NBA basketball or whatever.
Yeah. Maybe that's so interesting. It's so interesting that you mentioned that. Before we started the recording, I was telling Darlene that we're like cosmically connected in some way. And this idea, we're just going to do a little tangent on this being bored by our partners or bored by the person we want to connect with. I was literally talking about this with my husband this week, because my husband and I do something called the daily check-in. It's a concept that I teach. And it's just checking in. How are you? How was your day? What's going on? What's on your mind? And the Gottman Institute that I quote very often, they research what helps marriages thrive, and then they create interventions based on their research, and they also research what tears people apart, and they create interventions based on both ends of that spectrum. And they call it the self soothing conversation. And so there's actual research underneath it. But the idea is that you don't problem solve, you don't, you're not like troubleshooting anything, you're just sharing how you're doing. But what happens when you want to share how you're doing, but the other person is bored?
Yeah.
They don't want to hear how you're doing.
Or they don't have the capacity. Maybe they're tired. Maybe they're they're like, you haven't given me the time of day lately. Yeah. Like there's so much built underlying resentment that gets built
There's underlying resentment. So what do you do? And actually, perspective and partnership and pleasure, these three things we've already talked about, would be how you, what do you do about being bored or being resentful or whatever? How, is there another way I can look at it? So I can look at my partner and say, you're a human on earth in 2024. And that's fascinating. And, you know, my husband's an engineer. I'm a life coach. So we're very much like the yin and the yang. You know, he's very methodical and very creative, like those kinds of things, right? We both also have like a lot of right brain, left brain. We sort of can dabble in each side. But very often we're very focused on the ways we do things. And I could find computer engineering, which is what he does, very boring, right? And I look for what is fascinating about this. Like, he works at a credit card processing company. Like, I don't know, finance. Was anybody ever riveted? You know, do they make movies about that?
They
don't, right?
Well, they have made some. Like, usually if it's like a fraud or scam or something.
Like that, right? Like, what's the heightened drama, right? Yeah.
I was like, I would be like, who's getting scammed in your company?
Right? So, but we look for, well, what is fascinating about that? What is interesting about that? And that's a practice. That's a habit, right? So when I say I'm bored, I say it as if it's a state of being that cannot be altered and has no way forward. It's like, no, I can build a habit to be fascinated by a lot of things, and I can also have boundaries around it. So that perspective is, how else could I look at it? That boundary is like where we add the fun and the pleasures. Also, my husband and I have this as a running thing we do, which is, okay, what's the executive summary on that? what are the bullet points? You know, I could, like, I don't know, watch an Oprah interview and have like 15 things I want to tell him, right? And he's like, how about the top three? Right? Which makes it more fun for him and still includes some fun for me.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So being able to say, like, I'm open to this within this boundary, within this limit. Yeah. It's very, like, those who listen to the podcast, very similar when I say, like, you know, hey, if the kid is in a big feeling cycle, it's like, I'm happy to help you within these conditions, like, if within this boundary for the next couple of minutes, or as long as you're not hitting me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are the parameters around it, so that it's enjoyable to you, so that you have a level of, oh, I want to learn about this, but I don't need to know everything that was ever written about Pokemon. Yeah. I don't
listen to you for 5 full minutes. Ready, go.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Pick your favorite parts. Come back to me. You know, pick your favorite parts and come back to me. So, that's anyway, it's just a little tangent.
It's good. I love that you talked about, like, building a habit of being fascinated. Like, really, it's a practice, and working at how can I, on my own, take some initiative here and figure out how to find this interesting. And it's maybe it goes into that fourth essential element.
Yeah. So personal power. So I taught perspective, partnership, and pleasure for probably a couple of years. And then I realized, as I kept testing my hypothesis with my clients and working through different situations, that you can't consistently practice perspective, and partnership and pleasure as things that you turn towards without being engaged with your own personal power, which means simply having the thought, I matter.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
So if I matter, how do I want to handle this conversation? How long do I want to talk about Pokemon? How do I want to look at this situation with generosity and kindness, but also the boundaries, right? With like some things are not okay. If I don't include that I matter, I will allow things that are not okay. Mm-hmm. If I include that I matter, then I can explore what is okay and what's not okay.
Yeah, I have a question because I think sometimes we have this thought that I don't matter to my partner. And I wonder if that's such a limiting belief, like you don't really even know that whether that's true or not. But I wonder if that gets in the way of I matter.
Yeah. So I don't matter to my partner.
Like I matter to myself, but he doesn't give a shit about me.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, how sad if we all go through moments where we have a thought like that or the family of that. And I'll say two things about it. One is my hypothesis is people love us the best they can, not always the way we want to be loved. So very often, not always, sometimes some people, you know, are married to jerks and the partner really doesn't care. And so sometimes that is true. But out of 100 times, maybe it's 10 times, right? The other 90, something else is going on.
Yeah.
And for the other 90, it's more like, oh, the way they express what matters to them is so different than the way I express what matters to me.
Yes.
That it almost feels like we're coming from, you know, two completely different planets about this situation. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean I don't matter to them. It's just they express it so differently.
Yeah. Right? And that might be where the perspective comes in, right? Yes. Like, how can I see this differently?
How can I see this differently? Mm-hmm. And it comes in so many ways. I'll tell you an anecdotal thing about this exact thing. I had a client who her thought was, he's just not that into me. and she was convinced that this was real. This was what was happening. They were like in a very serious problem because he just wasn't into her. So I said, okay, maybe let's test it. Let's find out. So her coaching homework that week was to make a note of anything that he did that was kind, that was considerate, that you could tell, you know, he thought of her in order to do that thing.
Yeah.
And she was just supposed to keep a little list, you know, open a Google Doc, just a little bullet point of like, okay, he made me coffee or he, you know, turned the thermostat down on the way to the bedroom or like the tiniest little things, right? So she comes back the next week and I always say God has a sense of humor because first of all, she had 17 different things he did.
Evidence. I always call
all
it,
the time.
Yeah. Right?
And then that week that we were counting, he like bought her flowers and a card. And I'm like, God just has a sense of humor because this is just ridiculous, right? So apparently that's not the problem.
Like, yes, right. He is into me or I have evidence that he might be into me, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think of bridge thoughts, like how do I get to the thought that I'm trying to get towards? And it's like, I matter. And then I have evidence that I matter to him or her.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I'm not looking for it or I'm looking for them to do it the way I would do it. Mm-hmm. And that is when we get into all kinds of, you know, sticky situations because the way you would do it is the way you would do it.
I have a funny story about this. I don't want to go too tangential, but when I had young kids, right, they were two boys, 2 years apart, wild, you know, play toys all day long. Mm-hmm. And I would work really hard to make sure that the home was somewhat calm and peaceful when my husband came home from work. Mm-hmm. I felt sometimes I'm like, am I like 1950s, like changing my outfit and putting a ribbon in my hair and the three of us standing at the doorway, you know, waiting for dad. But I just felt like it was respectful for him. You know, he'd been at work and I wanted to, so I would, you know, clean up the house and I would clean up the counters and make sure the kitchen was clean and this and that. And then weeks go by, he still walks in grumpy, and kind of gruff around about the house. Mm-hmm. And there was a point when I was like, hey, I work so hard at cleaning this house for you when you get home so that it feels peaceful and calm. And he goes, you do? And I was like, what? Yes. I go and I clean all the countertops and I put some stuff away and da da da. And he goes, every time I walk in here, there's toys all over the floor. And I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's just toys. They're just on the floor. Like, that's not a big deal. The floor doesn't matter. And he's like, well, the countertops don't matter.
Ah, so good.
And I was like, wait, what? He's like, I don't care if there's shit on the countertops. All these toys in the floor is what I see. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, we could probably put those in bins, you know, put all the toys away or not or whatever. Like, I don't have to please him, but it was just so fascinating to me to think I'm doing so much that he's not appreciating. And he's like, she's not doing anything.
Yes. I think that's so powerful because when you think about negotiating a life together, mm-hmm. one of the things that nobody teaches us in school is this that you just described, which is the skill of asking what is meaningful to you.
Yes.
What would you like? What would be delightful when you get home? Uh-huh. And so many of us, and this is such a good example because we twist ourselves into pretzel to do this thing that we think needs to be done because someone somewhere did it on TV or in a movie or whatever. And really what's meaningful to the other person is this really simple thing that's so easy for you to do that it's like, wait, that takes 5 minutes and this takes half an hour and you want the 5 minute thing?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, that's so simple. The boys could do that part.
Yeah.
To throw all the toys in the bin because we're going to bed anyway. And then it was like changed my whole lifestyle because then the toys were all off the floor for me.
And but, something you know, that happens is we get so scared of asking the other person, what would you like? Because we think they're going to want something that's so even beyond.
More. I'm already doing everything I could possibly do. I can't do more.
Yeah. And so I just offer to everyone listening, like if you just ask the person you want to relate more deeply or better with, what would be meaningful to you? What would you like?
Yes. Yeah. I have like a million examples because my husband used to order these flowers for me from, I think like Pro Flowers or something like that.
Yeah.
And they came in a box, but no vase.
Yeah. No, that's I'm a hard no on that.
I am a hard no too. And like he kept doing, he would buy me flowers and then mm-hmm. he would, or go to Trader Joe's and buy flowers.
Yeah.
And then he just hand them to me. And I was like, this is work. I do not want to do any work.
Yeah.
When I receive a gift.
Yeah.
And eventually I said, I love what you're doing, but I don't like the way you're doing it. And he was
that's
like,
a great way to say it too.
Yeah. And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I then have to cut these flowers and throw the trash away and put them in the vase and that. And he's like, oh, what do you want? I was like, just put them in a vase. And he's like, okay.
Buy the ones that come in a vase. They have them in some supermarkets too.
Yes, right. Or if you buy them, put them in a vase. And like Valentine's just passed. And I come down and there's a beautiful arrangement in a vase. And I am appreciative of it. So I think this is really interesting to talk about like how sometimes we cross. We miss each other. We're trying to do things. Yeah. And the other person isn't seeing them.
Yes.
And it's like, it's so much easier. It's so much easier to say, oh, they don't care. They don't care. They're not thinking about me. They don't have perspective.
Versus asking for what you want. So this is another great example of you had to have the belief that you mattered to even ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so just the thought, like I matter, so I get to ask for things that I find pleasing or delightful, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you made the ask, you prioritized building rapport. You prioritize the partnership. I appreciate what you're doing. I don't like the way you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It is one of the most beautiful ways to give feedback to someone and say, hey, your effort is recognized. I see you. Mm-hmm. And this is what would delight me.
So good.
So good.
Everyone should just write that bit down.
Yeah.
Right there. Let's talk about, we've kind of talked about it a little bit. So let's go back. Okay. So it's perspective.
Yes.
Is there another way to look at this?
Yep.
Partnership. Are we on the same team?
Mm-hmm.
Pleasure. Are we having fun?
Mm-hmm.
Personal power. Am I thinking I matter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now what we've kind of talked about, like when we're feeling that disconnection or like, mm-hmm. especially, you know, when you're raising kids, there's so much going on. You got like every weekend is filled with a birthday party and a soccer game and, you know, housework and, oh, it's just you. Then you got to go to your in-laws. It is a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to feel drifted apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that disconnection. So it's like kind of like, what do you see is the main culprit of why we get disconnected? And then sort of what are some ways to get back?
Okay, so.
And please don't say date night or everyone will stop listening. I'm just kidding.
Okay, that wasn't even in my awareness, but good to know. Thank you.
Because I think that's what we hear a lot. You need to prioritize date night. And people are like, what are you talking? Who's going to watch my kids? Like, it just feels like another thing. Yeah. So let's talk about, yeah.
So let's just take another tangent on that. So I don't call it date night.
Uh-huh.
I like to think about it for the same reason as together time.
I love that.
And together time can be in the morning having 5 minutes of coffee. Together time can be right after you put the kids to bed and you have like 20 minutes to just breathe. Like together, it's more what works for you. Some people love going out on dates. I love my house. I don't even need to leave my house. You know what I'm saying? We have a hot date planned tonight. Ooh. And our hot date is I'm obsessed with Formula One and we're going to watch Drive to Survive on Netflix. Uh-huh. And I couldn't be more excited. Right.
I like, love it.
And then we plan, what are we going to eat? What are we going to have? It's going to be pizza night. Like we have a whole plan for this thing, but it's what works for you. So anybody, whenever you hear someone say date night, you just say together time that works for me. Just replace that whole sentence. Together time that works for us. That is important. I will tell you that when I talk to people who are struggling in their marriages, because I'm a marriage coach, I talk to a lot of people who are struggling.
You think?
When I ask them, how much time do you spend together?
Mm-hmm.
The people who are struggling the most spend the least time.
Yeah.
And people who are thriving spend the most time.
There's definitely a correlation.
There's definitely prioritizing how you think about the together time, how you plan, like all of these different pieces. It just shows you where your work is. It just shows you what do I need to figure out here, right?
Yeah.
When there's a deficit of time together, sometimes you were asking me what creates the drift. So I want to name it. So that feeling of disconnection, we feel like roommates instead of soulmates, anything like that. This is something that specific term was coined by the Gottman Institute, who I love quoting because it's just so clear and succinct. So the drift is if you imagine yourself in the ocean and you and your partner, let's say in this case, in a marriage or deep relationship, the natural inclination of the ocean is for you to drift apart. But this is true in any relationship with your kids, with your cousin, with your parents, any relationship. If the natural flow of life is just for you to drift apart, unless you turn towards each other on purpose. Even at work, right? Even if like you have different projects and different things, you have to choose to do those projects on purpose that day. And if we don't choose to turn towards each other, we just continue to drift further and further and further, further apart. Now, you gave that example of every weekend is filled.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I would take that perspective and say, is there another way I can look at this? Why is every weekend filled? How do I want to decide how to fill my weekend? Right. If my, let's say my family matters, like my relationship with my kids, and my marriage matters, my relationship with my partner, how do I want those weekends to look? What will I say yes to and what will I say no to?
Yeah. I'd love to speak to that for a second because
yeah.
We actively chose not to do travel sports, like club, anything, because my husband worked like 60 hours a week and he had a commute. And he was just not, we're called Hollywood widows. That's what the term is for people who are married to people in the film industry. Mm-hmm. And he would leave and I would not see him I wouldn't see him. I would go to bed and he was not home. Like most of the years that I was raising young kids, but then he didn't work on the weekends. And so we were so precious about our weekends and he needed to be at home because he wasn't at home. And he didn't want to be driving, you know, an hour and a half and sitting on a field and this kind of thing and having our life be that way. So we were really like protective of that.
Yes. And
I'm grateful for those decisions. Now, did it maybe impact my kids because they didn't get better at sports?
Yeah.
right? Or whatever, we weren't maybe as qualified to play on the high school team and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Sure, possibly. But they had a relationship with their dad who was happy, and their parents' marriage was working.
Yes.
And so that was just more important to us.
Yeah.
But that's because of our time constraints.
Yeah. Well, for you, it's sort of like you had this organic reason to have to decide.
Yes.
And most of us don't have an organic reason to have to decide. So we just react on a day-to-day basis of like whatever falls in front of us. We just.
Right. Everyone else is doing it. We should just do this or like.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So the people who are listening to this podcast, like, yay you for listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
And being intentional about how you want to raise your kids and how you want to show up in your relationships. And like, and part of that being intentional is there will always be in management, if you have an MBA or something like that, there will always be an opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. It's the price I pay for the thing I don't do, right? Yeah. So I invest over here, I'm giving up something over there. There's a cost. So in your case, it's such a beautiful illustration. It's like the cost is, okay, the kids' journey in sports is going to be different because you as parents made this choice. Mm-hmm. But their journey in life is going to be different because you as parents made this choice. So it's like, am I willing to pay the price of that mm-hmm. opportunity cost? For me, I'm very social. I do podcast interviews. I coach people. I talk and listen in deep ways with a lot of hyper-focus all the time. And sometimes on the weekend, I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah, I agree. Right?
And so sometimes my wonderful, amazing extended family is always doing things. And my opportunity cost is I miss out sometimes on time with them to rest and just be with a book or just be quiet or just, you know, watch a movie. And it's like, am I willing to pay that cost? Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not.
I remember now I coined this phrase like work recovery. Ooh. So we had like these five priorities was work. Mm-hmm. Work recovery, our marriage, mm-hmm. our kids, and our house. Mm-hmm. And those five things sometimes, I always think of as a Ferris wheel, like whatever's at the top, but the things are still important. And sometimes the Ferris wheel is moving, 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 and it's all great and everything's getting managed. And other times something's at the top and that's what you're focused on.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to forget about all the rest.
Yes.
And there was a lot of weekends that was like work and work recovery.
I love that so much.
Mm-hmm. We would just spend time being in recovery. And that's not, you know, maybe working on our parenting or marriage or like, we're just like letting the kids do whatever. Or like, we're just all doing our own thing because we're recovering from a heavy work week. And then other times it's like, no, this is a house weekend. This is a project weekend. We're going to focus on our marriage. We're going to be really invested in our kids, whatever. Yeah.
I love work recovery. It's so clear.
Yeah.
And I love thinking about, you know, I talk about like nerding out on some of these things, right? Like
yeah,
I'm nerding out on this right now. So I talk a lot about how in nature, things happen in a cyclical manner. But our Western industrialized society where productivity is revered like a deity, mm-hmm. we pretend like humans don't need work recovery.
Yeah.
You pretend. Yeah. And then burn out, and then we have all these other health issues and all these other relationship issues because we're just pretending that we are widgets in a factory as opposed to like organic organisms that work the way the rest of the planet works, right? There's night and day, there's ebb and flow of the ocean.
Well, there's winter, sometimes there's whole seasons.
There's whole seasons. Mm-hmm.
We're That's why it always makes me laugh. Like, why am I making goals in January? All I want to do is hide in a bush and like be in my couch and be quiet. And then, you know, middle of February, people start to emerge out a little bit. Like, oh yeah, because we should probably be making goals and have a new year at the spring.
Yes, when everything is blooming, when everything is growing. Like the idea that we would pause and mm-hmm. ask ourselves, how do I want it to go? Again, is a perspective. It's like, how do I want to think about this thing? Mm-hmm. And then I matter. So I get to choose how I relate to my life.
I know. It's so good. I matter. Yeah. And that means saying no. And you said, yeah, opportunity is a cost. And like, yeah, well, I always think we really do need to have our priority. Like, what are what's important to us in this season or big picture? I would always say like, early in those years, I'd say, I want to be married to Kevin in the back end. I would say that like, whatever was going on and struggle. And we were, you know, had so many struggles those years. And it's like, I need to do whatever I can to set myself up for the back end, which I'm about to go into empty nest. I have a senior in high school, last kid. Yeah. And it's this man and I, you know, that we'll be married 27 years. And it's like, okay, we're at our back end.
Here we are. We made it.
What's it going to look like? I have no idea. So I have a lot of work to do, but I think that was my, one of my priorities is like, how can I make sure that this marriage is, it exists.
Right. In a way that works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it was just, let's keep it existing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we'll figure it out. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. But that, okay. I want to talk about that. Like that you have this concept and I love it. And I've learned a lot about this is like your spouse doesn't have to change in order for you to be happy.
Yes. And
I really had to own that for myself in order to then have the marriage I wanted.
Yes.
And so I would love for you to talk about that. Yeah.
So here's the thing. Sometimes our spouses do change. Sometimes we do shift things in ourselves. Just like when you teach your parents how to deal with their kids' behavior actually does change.
100%. And I actually do see this with this concept with my husband. Yes.
Yeah. So what we stop doing is we stop hanging our happiness on it.
Yeah.
Stop hanging and like literally like, well, figuratively, not literally, figuratively, like making it conditional that I cannot have peace or joy or anything good unless this changes. We become detached to in our relationship to like, how do I want to handle this? Mm-hmm. And inside that detachment, we create space where very often the byproduct is the person responds in different ways.
Oh my, I see it so much in the parenting work. Like,
yes.
We stop focusing on their behavior and what they're doing wrong and how much the kid is like a problem. And we shift to, this is different than in marriage, but shift to like, what is delightless is one of the things I teach. Like, what are the things that I like about this kid?
Yes.
And then the perspective stuff, where is it going well? And like bringing pleasure into the relationship. And then the like little tiny feeling between the two people, the energy shifts.
Yes. Okay.
Gross.
So that's it. So the idea is you don't have to wait for the person to be different before you take action towards what you want. Mm-hmm. That's another like layer of nuance within that. It's like, if I'm waiting for my spouse to change, I'm just going to sit and wait for a very long time. Right. Versus, okay, if I release whether they change or not as part of the essential part of the equation, what do I want different? How would I plan my weekend? What do I want to prioritize? I start doing the things that engage me in the world, and then they simply respond to what you're presenting in front of them. So instead of me, I don't know, nitpicking something and getting all annoyed about it, I'm like, I would be so delighted if we stayed home this weekend, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this and this and this. Would you like to join me for any part of that?
Yeah. And make that invitation. I think sometimes it's easy to stop inviting.
Yeah.
And stop trying. Yeah. Or like I invited my husband to this thing. I got tickets to like an LA food and wine festival type of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you want to come? And he's like, it's crowded. I don't really care about food. I don't drink, like, you know, da, da, da. And I'm like, really want to make him wrong.
Yeah.
Like, what's the wrong impulse with you? What are you doing? You're so boring. You're so lazy. You're so like, I really want to make him like wrong. And then bringing the perspective in of like, I can go, I can find someone who would love it. Yeah. And that doesn't mean anything about our relationship. Doesn't mean anything about him.
Yeah.
And then if I also want him to go, he will.
Yeah.
If I present it in a way that's like, it would make it fun for me if you came.
Or is there any part of this that's interesting to you? Like, what if we just went for lunch?
Yeah, right. We just got our bellies full. Yeah.
Right. Like, how do we make it a win-win for both of us? And my husband and I have gone to the lengths, so to speak, of we sometimes go in separate cars to things. Right. It's like, what part of this do I want to engage in? And what part of this do I not want to engage in? It's removing also all or nothing thinking.
Yeah.
From our marriage or our partner or how we approach things.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes it is saying, I would really love to have this experience and I'd love to have it with you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to spend an afternoon? Here's how I'm thinking we would approach it. Here's what I'm thinking we would do. And just sometimes we can be uncomfortable or do things that aren't our favorite thing in service and love to the person that we care about. That's okay, but how we approach it, giving them the space to say, like, oh, I want to be there all day. Well, can we just do the afternoon? Like, giving them the space to have, like, what is the essence of the thing that you want? And then finding how that's possible with the other person.
And like, I can be happy if he says no. I can still do my thing. And
Yes.
yeah, but and I can keep inviting. I just think we get like, I'm gonna do my own thing. I see this like when parents have kids like in middle school, if their kids get a little bit older where they can stay home alone or they're not as needy, the children, and the drifting has happened. And then it's like, I go do this with my friends and I go, I'm out here and I'm on this trip with the girls and this and that. And there's not really the invitation of coming together and saying, like, I care about this relationship. I want to, be in it. And I'm happy. I'm okay. And I want more from,
From that relationship. And whether it's with your kids or with your partner, it's okay, there's a space for me to do the things that I'm interested in. And what's the space where we as a family or you and I in our relationship, what are the things that we could do together that could be fun for both of us where we can connect? And then how do I prioritize those things within also exploring the things that matter to me? It's like a dance. It's a little bit
It
of a dance.
is. It is. And it's a lot of talking like it out a little bit and creating space. Like your daily check-in sounds like a nice pattern or habit that you have. And that might be the room of like, let's just talk through this weekend. Or I got an invitation to this thing. I want to talk to you about it. Whatever.
Even having a simple conversation as a family on what do you value, like what's important to you. So, I'm sure everyone listening can see that there are things we value more than other things. But sometimes we don't articulate that. You all are listening to this podcast and you're like, oh, yeah, that's so important. Okay. So it's like, do I value freedom? Do I value routine? Do I value spontaneity? Do I value planning? Do I value time together, having adventures? Or do I value meeting lots of different new people and giving my kids lots of different types of experiences? What do I value? Right. And within that, then how, what are the places where we can honor the things each person in the family values?
I think I noticed it as I parented longer or had a family longer. And I like look back and I was like, oh, apparently we really value going to national parks. But I was like, okay, nature, time outside. This was like a huge value that I don't know if it was articulated, but you could see it in our life. Like what you sometimes maybe you don't know what you value, but you can look at the decisions you've made and see, oh, we spend a lot of time doing this type of thing. Is this, I must care about this, or do I care about this? I've spent so much time doing this.
Why? Wait,
Do I
was it my
even like
grandfather
it?
or was it me? Right, or whatever. The way you can tell what you value really quickly for everyone listening
Please tell us.
is look at your calendar and look at your bank account immediately. So my husband and I, we live in Miami. We could be at South Beach every weekend. We don't value that. There's nothing, if you look at our credit card statement, there's nothing about that. We go on family breakfast at a hole in the wall place that is like authentic Nicaraguan food. And because my husband, you can immediately see if you look at your bank account, these are the things I value, right? I have a very humble car. I drive a Hyundai. I love it. It's amazing. But I spend a lot of money on coaching. I'm a coach. And if you look at my bank account, you'd be like, oh, this woman values coaching, right? You can immediately tell. And then your calendar. Do you go on trips? Do you go out every weekend? Do you spend money on art? Do you have beautiful art in your office? Like, you can immediately tell, and then you can help that, allow that to be clues as to, like, oh, what if I valued it on purpose?
Or is this actually important to me?
In this chapter. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I just think about my own budget because I've been doing like really severe budgeting those past couple of years. Like, you know, write down everything, whatever. Well, I don't write it down. The credit card tells me what I spent. and I just think like, oh, I'm thinking as you ask that, like, oh, is that really what I want to value? Like,
yeah, but that's a great question.
Yeah. Like is, oh, wow. I spent a lot of money on that. Do I even care about it? Do I want to do that?
Does it still matter to me the way it mattered before?
Yeah. Or is it just a habit?
Is it just a habit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Well, that's just some life coaching right there.
There you go.
okay. Anything that you want to tell us that we haven't talked about? And I want to spend a few minutes talking about your program because I do want to give everyone listening a chance to know how to work with you. But like really, I think on a podcast, we sometimes leave that to the end. You're like, okay, so go to my website. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I would love for you to tell us what you do in your 6-month program and like lay it out a little bit and give us some room to breathe into it because it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. Let's talk about that. Absolutely. I would love for you to ask me anything you're curious about the program. Cause for me, I don't know anything about human design. I know nothing, but I have been told that I am, I thrive when I'm in response. So when you ask me a question, I'm just like, yes, let's dive in. As opposed to like, oh my gosh, I could tell you 54 things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, now I want to just talk about human design.
That's another episode.
It's funny because a couple weeks ago on a podcast, I was like talking about internal family systems and I was like, but we can't talk about that today. And I was like, it's another episode.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know, it's a 6-month container.
Yes.
It's a group program.
Yes.
And I think like someone comes in and they're most of the time struggling, right? In their marriage, maybe they feel hopeless or they feel discouraged or they feel like they're in pain. And I wonder what that is like to go into a group when you're feeling that vulnerable. I'd love for you to talk about that.
Yeah, I would say the people who end up working with me are hopeful because that's why they join the program.
Oh, because they buy it. They're like, oh, we're going to be okay. Or like,
we're going to figure this out. We're going to do something about it. So it is a slightly different, it is vulnerable 100%. Uh-huh. And it is a tender time in your relationship when you're kind of thinking about what do I want my marriage to look like? I tend to have two different like types of people who come and work with me in the program, and it's someone who's like at a turning point who really needs to decide. Sometimes it's empty nest. What do I want my marriage to be about now? It's really sort of a reset in the relationship in some way. Sometimes it is taking things from good to great, where it's like a lot of things are working really well, but there's some things that aren't, and we need to calibrate those. And then sometimes it's I really need help. I don't know how to talk to this person, or I don't know, like, it's really how do we relate to each other. So it is a little bit of a variety in a group program. Mm-hmm. Some people really thrive in a group environment, hearing celebrations, hearing struggles, feeling less alone. And some people really, and I just really want to say this as a coach, really need to do like one-on-one work. If you don't thrive in a group program, you shouldn't do a group program. Like there's no good, bad, better, worse thing. It's like, what are the conditions in which you thrive? Yeah. And I think that's an important thing to just think about. Mm-hmm. And when people apply, that's why I have an application process for them, because I really want to check in on what do they want to get out of it? All those kinds of sort of logistical things. So when someone comes in, we talk about the stress cycle. Mm-hmm. Let me just say, if anybody is in your program, they will love my program because we are cut from the same cloth and some of the things that we teach and that we do. So they come in and they get a whole orientation sequence. They get an email, they get a video workshop, which part of it is just the logistics of how to get the most out of the program. And part of that orientation is how does your stress cycle work? Mm-hmm. How do you decide what to focus on when you're in the program? What are your top three values in your relationship? And how can we help you turn towards them over and over and over again? And what gets in the way of you turning towards them? So I have some actual teaching training pieces, and then they can come to our coaching calls. We have live coaching calls as well. They can ask questions about what they're learning. They can get coached in their specific situation. And I mix a lot of teaching with coaching. So even when I'm coaching, I teach little pieces of things.
Yeah, that's how I do it too. Because it's not always, sometimes you need some basic information or a skill. There's a skill gap. And so we have to like kind of, well, here's a skill or here's a little bit of concept. And now knowing this, how would you respond?
Yes, that's exactly, if I was going to distill it down, it's like now knowing this, what comes up for you, how, where could you get stuck? What could get in the way? It's that kind of thing. What else? Yeah, that's
basically I love it. So is it ongoing enrollment or is how does it work?
So we're talking in 2024. Who knows?
Yeah.
If you're listening to this in the future, just go to my website and we'll see.
That's how I feel about my programs. I'm like, we're always in, perpetual response to whatever is happening. You know,
This is the truth today. So today, it is a continuous enrollment program, which means if you're listening to this and you're inspired and you want to apply, you can go to my website. All the details are there. And so you have, just like you would join, I don't know, something that expired. I was going to join a gym, but a gym doesn't necessarily have an expiration date. Mm-hmm. But you start on your first day, and then in 6 months, you have an end date. Uh-huh. And you can continue on if you want to.
And like renew again or whatever.
Renew again or whatever. But it's 6 months. And the reason that it's 6 months is I really think you need to have time to sort of fall down and get back up again and fall down and get back up again and play with some of the tools and the teachings and the things that I talk about and breathe with it. Because I could teach everything in like a week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to go into, it's kind of you with kids. You have to go into your marriage.
Yeah.
Do some of these things, have some of these hard conversations, and then come back and say, okay, here's where I landed now. Here's what's going on now. And for that, I think you need space to breathe.
Yeah. And have support in that process.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So if they want to join or learn more about the program, they go to MaggieReyes.com.
.com/group.
Group. And then what is it called? Like we've been saying MBA, but what is it?
Yeah. It's called the Marriage MBA. Uh-huh. It's the name, and it actually stands for the Marriage Mindset Breakthrough Activator.
I love it.
My intention behind it is that you will always be able to create your own breakthroughs once you learn the things that I'm teaching you in the program and practice the things that I'm teaching you. Is I have this very deep abiding desire that you learn how to do it for yourself. Mm-hmm. I was just watching an interview with the founder of Hinge. It's a dating app. And one of their principles is designed to be deleted.
Yeah.
Obsessed with this principle. It's like I want to coach you. I want to help you for as long as you need help and support and all those things. But more than that, I want you to be able to internalize the things we're talking about.
Yeah.
So that you can, 10 years from now, just fall back on that skill and know exactly how to handle any situation that comes up in your relationship with confidence and with grace.
I love that. Sometimes I'll think to myself like, oh, I don't see that client that much anymore or something like that. And then I'm like, oh, that's because they got what they came for.
Yeah.
Like they learned the things they wanted to learn and they're now implementing them. And that's beautiful. And that's the whole purpose. Like we're not trying to create people who constantly need us. Like, it's like, let me give you some skills and a foundation. And then you go create the marriage you want. You go create the parenting relationships you want. It's like, that's what we're here for. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much for being here. We'll put all the details to find Maggie in the show notes. And I'm just so grateful.
Thank you for having me. I got to have fun with my crush today.
That's how I feel too. All week I was like, I get to talk to Maggie this week. I was really thrilled. So thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, everyone. Hope you have a great week.